listening to Fox Sports Radio.
And then there was one. We are just 14 hours and 30 minutes from the biggest game of the year in the NFL. How big? Well, about 104 million people will be watching tomorrow from 180 countries in 30 languages. You know, kind of like this show. I'm Bernie Fratto. We're coming to you live from the Geico Fox Sports Radio studios, where 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance. So go to geico.com for a free rate quote. Now, what follows tonight is nothing short of a Super Bowl extravaganza. See, tonight's preparation. Tomorrow is the celebration. Now, we don't have royalty in this country. Our athletes and our entertainers, well, they're our royalty. And in just a few short hours, we get to witness both. This is the weekend edition of Straight Outta Vegas, and I'm joined in studio by Steve Fezzik, the only two-time winner of the prestigious Hilton, now Westgate Super Contest. And so I can just say this. Please take your seats, folks. It's time for kickoff. As they say in Floodwood, Minnesota, it's going to be lit. This is Straight Outta Vegas, the pregame show you always wanted. Fez, you said it last Thanksgiving. The Kansas City Chiefs would be in the Super Bowl. In a minute, I'm going to ask you why and what got them there. And this is my opening statement to start the show. Of all the analysis you're going to hear tonight and of all the notes I have and of all the reasons I believe the Niners are here and I believe they'll win, this is number one. The San Francisco 49ers led the NFL this season with an average of 6.7 yards per play on first down plays. So when all you have to do is convert first downs into second downs with 3.3 yards to go, that is what puts the Niners into Super Bowl 54. What got the Chiefs into Super Bowl 54?
Well, the Chiefs became a much, much better team as the year went on. Let's face it, that offense got compromised because Mahomes got injured, got his ankle stomped on, and they lost at home against Indy and against Houston when Mahomes was clearly not himself. And in fact, Matt Moore had to play three games. So if you look at the underlying stats for the Chiefs, they look good, but they don't look fantastic because they had five games on offense where Mahomes was not 100%. So the offense is better than the stats say, and that defense got better and better over the course of the year. The defense was the Achilles heel last year.
Yes.
This year under new defensive coordinator, Steve Spagnuolo, once the bye week hit, that Chiefs defense played like a top 10 defense, and that run defense, their Achilles heel of the defense, got better, and ultimately they were able to stop Derrick Henry.
That's a great point. Since week 12, the Chiefs' defense has been above average, and we have got so much to get to tonight. We've both got a lot of analysis and statistics that are correlating to where we see this game headed. You're in for a treat. Steve Fezzik is what I would consider to be the world's foremost authority on prop betting, and we'll talk a lot about that tonight. And not just which props he likes, but basic prop strategy. Fez will have the latest market update. We'll both have best bets at the end of the show. And as I said, I've got the analysis, a Philadelphia lawyer would love to hear. But before we get to that, Fez, welcome back from Miami. You were in Atlanta last year with the Straight Outta Vegas crew, and you were in Miami this year. You got to spend time with dignitaries, our boss Scott Shapiro and my good buddy Rob Parker, the Odd Couple guys, and you were even part of Colin Cowherd's podcast.
Yes, so it was fantastic to see all the guys. Colin's always tremendous to speak with, and Rob does a great job with his show, along with Chris Broussard, and Scott Shapiro and Don Martin set us up with a fantastic location right there on Miami Beach on the boardwalk there. And I got to tell you, Bernie, I was spoiled. I was humbled. It was just a great time.
Terrific. And one final thought and observation before we dive into this. You have, in your opinion, an observation about climate and juxtaposing what you experienced in Atlanta last year versus this year and your thought going forward on what the Super Bowl might want to consider.
Yeah, and this is a little bit different from the narrative. The narrative I always hear is, boy, it's great that they moved the Super Bowl around and they've moved it to some of the northern climates. Obviously, in Minnesota, you're playing it indoors, but the game in New York, the game in Atlanta, and I think they should keep it in the South because, let's face it, Super Bowl tickets right now, $5,000 just to get in. That's the minimum to get into Miami. with that kind of price ticket, I think you should be selling a fantastic fan experience. And the bottom line, I'm just one guy speaking here, but in Atlanta, they did a really nice job, but it was cold. And the experience in Miami was, for me, so much more favorable than being in Atlanta because you could go out and explore the city and walk around. Not that we had that much time, but it really was a extravaganza in Miami, for I felt, compared to in Atlanta, just a lot more constraints with the weather.
Well, and that's fair. I covered Super Bowl 40 in Detroit 2006. It was 38 degrees. That was warm to us. But the game was indoors, so I digress. Fez, I don't, you know, folks can characterize this game in about a million different ways. Some people are calling it basically Air KC versus Ground San Francisco. You've got the best quarterback on the planet versus the number one pass defense. There are a couple of things about this game, though, that really got me on San Francisco earlier in the week, and I've gotten on them again, and I've got a couple live parlays to San Francisco tomorrow. This defense is for real, Fez, and most notably for me, the one stat that stuck out, and I couldn't wait to tell you this. I didn't tease it before air. I wanted to save it for on air. This really stuck out of my mind. The San Francisco defense garnered 57 sacks this year, yet they blitz the least of any team in the NFL. They only blitz 20% of the time. No one blitzes less, yet they had 57 sacks. In the history of the Super Bowl, only six teams have had north of 55 sacks. All six won the Super Bowl. What this tells me about this San Francisco defense is they can send four and drop seven and still guard that Pat Mahomes prolific pass defense.
No question they can get out after the quarterback. Now, one problem that San Francisco's defense has had is containing mobile quarterbacks. So it'll be interesting to
true,
see.
True.
Mahomes wasn't that mobile over the regular season. In the playoffs, last two playoff games has run 7 and 8 times, both times for 53 yards. Obviously, we remember the Tennessee touchdown run that he had. So with Russell Wilson torching the San Francisco defense, with Kyler Murray doing the same, and of course, Lamar Jackson doing it, that's been the one weakness of the San Francisco defense, and that's why, in fact, the pros bet Mahomes to go over 29 rush yards. That's up to 35.5, and I think that was really sharp money projecting that Mahomes would tuck it and run in this game.
Which doesn't necessarily mean they're going to crash their defensive ends. Mahomes will make you miss. Mahomes will make you miss 72% of the time, and if you put him in a vise, instead of trying to sack him, you might keep him in the pocket. And let's face it, who's who is Patrick Mahomes' number one target in your view?
My Mahomes and Otto. You know, it'll be interesting to see, because I would think normally, of course, I'd say Tyreek Hill.
No.
But
Travis Kelce.
Yes, of course, because who are you going to stop? You're going to give up a 30-yard over-the-middle pass to Kelce and tackle him, or are you going to let Tyreek Hill run and count on your safeties to bring him down without breaking it for a touchdown? The priority for the defense has to be to contain the cheetah.
Absolutely. And so no team has given up fewer receiving yards to tight ends than San Francisco. As a matter of fact, 30% of the entire yardage garnered by tight ends this year versus San Francisco were in one game, and that was the game that Jaquiski Tartt, Quan Alexander, and Dee Ford were all out. All three will be playing in the Super Bowl. Now, I do understand that Patrick Mahomes, again, is a lot like Russell Wilson, a guy who did give the Niners trouble, Fez. You've got to have two game plans for Mahomes. You've got a scheme, the one you scheme pregame, and then the game plan for when the play breaks down and Mahomes becomes an improvisational freelancer. But why is everybody, this is really sticking in my craw, it's Mahomes, 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 as if Jimmy G is not even playing. I happen to think Jimmy G is more than capable. 23-5 as a starter, and yes, they only attempted, 28 passes in their last two games because they didn't need to. He's capable of doing it. He threw for 350 yards and four touchdowns against the New Orleans Saints. He threw for almost 4,000 yards this year. I bet people would be shocked to know that the Niners have not only averaged 32 points in their two playoff games, they averaged 30 during the regular season. In cumulative, the Chiefs scored 451 points. The Niners scored 479 points. So they can play offense as well, regardless of whether or not Jimmy G is putting up cartoon numbers.
Yeah, but you're comparing apples to oranges, I would argue, because you got three games with Matt Moore playing for Kansas City, and like I said, those two games where Mahomes was limping around and couldn't run at all and couldn't move in the pocket. So clearly, in my eyes, Kansas City has not just a better defense; they got a much better defense. Kansas City is the best defense. I'm sorry, best offense in the NFL. San Fran, I will give it to you. Most certainly, you could say they're fifth. You could say they're ninth. They're certainly a top 10 offense for San Francisco. And I think the concerns with Jimmy G stem from the fact, if you watch the Viking game, he threw a bad interception at the end of the first half, and it sure looked like Shanahan was like,
no need for
that anymore. We're going to hand that ball off.
Oh, yeah, you want to go to the wart on Lincoln's nose argument, okay? Look, you know, they once asked Paul McCartney, is Ringo Starr the best drummer in the world? McCartney said, tongue-in-cheek, he's not even the best drummer in this band. But without Ringo Starr, there are no Beatles. Without Jimmy G, this version of Jimmy G, with Kyle Shanahan and the symbiotic relationship they have, there is no San Francisco 49ers. They were a four-win team last year without Jimmy G. And I know there were other factors. But regardless, go ahead.
And I give him credit because you look at the Rams game at the end of the year. You look at the New Orleans game. And the defense, frankly, did not play well down the stretch for San Francisco. And Jimmy G won that Rams game, and he won that New Orleans game. And a good question is, what happened to that elite San Francisco defense the second half of the year when they were giving up more than league average in terms of points given up? And now the narrative is, oh, Dee Ford's back. Quan Alexander's back. You mentioned Tart, the safety's back. But the truth is, Alexander and Dee Ford have not been playing well in the playoffs. They have not been grading out. So those players coming back cannot explain why the San Francisco defense is suddenly playing better. And I'd argue they had really good matchups against Kirk Cousins and then against Green Bay. We will see how well the defense performs against the number one offense in the NFL.
Well, I will argue that, again, there are three phases. And what sticks out to me tremendously is the fact that when you juxtapose the Kansas City offense versus the San Francisco defense, and then the 49ers offense versus the Kansas City defense, there's a decided advantage for San Francisco. And so there's much less margin of error for the Chiefs. For instance, for the Niners offense in points per game is second, and the Chiefs' points per game is third, but the Niners' defense in holding points per game is fifth, and the Chiefs are 10th. Here's the real kicker. The Niners' offense rush yards per game, second in the NFL. The Chiefs rank 25th in that category. You have to be a little worried if you're a Chiefs fan, if the Niners establish the run. Do I think they will? Yes, the Niners are fourth in time of possession this year. They're going to control clock. They're going to control tempo. They're going to control the line of scrimmage. Now, on the other side, the key for San Francisco, they've got to limit big plays. They really do kind of have to take away Hill and Kelce and force Mahomes to create magic elsewhere with some of his other weapons. The other thing they've got to do is stop Patrick Mahomes on third down. He is brilliant on third down. On third down this year, he threw 12 touchdown passes. That's good for second in the NFL. His passer rating, Mahomes' passer rating on third down was 120.7, second in the NFL. Yards per completion on third down alone, 15.2. That was first in the NFL. If the Chiefs are able to get big plays, we got ourselves a fight.
What a contrast, right? So we've got a San Francisco team that's getting almost 7 yards per play on first down, setting them up for all their drives.
Yep.
And we've got Mahomes who says, hey, you know, third and 14, no problem. I will find a way to pick it up.
And I want to give you top credit for something you just said that might have been buried there. Patrick Mahomes' career versus top 10 defenses. He's 10-1. His one loss record, 22 touchdowns, 7 interceptions, and a passer rating of 102. Styles make fights. I can't wait to watch this game, but I do like the 49ers. We have got so much to get to. Fez is going to give us his latest market update. You want to know where the money's coming. We're going to talk basic prop strategy. There's only about 500 props you can bet. We're going to give our best bets and some props, and we've got much more continued analysis. You want to hear something amazing? Discover matches all the cash back you earn at the end of your first year automatically, with no limit as to how much will match. Millions of people a year are getting their cash back matched. Discover Cash Back Match. What are you waiting for? Learn more at discover.com/cashbackmatch. He is Steve Fezzik. I'm Bernie Fratto. We're coming to you live from the Geico Fox Sports Radio Studios. This is the pregame show you always wanted. So don't go away. You're listening to Straight Outta Vegas.
Straight Outta Vegas!
We are back on Straight Out of Vegas, the pregame show you always want. And I'm Bernie Fratto coming to you live from the Geico Fox Sports Radio studios. What does it mean when Geico says just 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance? I mean, you probably should have gone to geico.com 15 minutes ago. Fez, this is a game tomorrow. Nationally, approximately $6.8 billion will be wagered. That's billion with a B. I'm expecting the game here in Las Vegas to exceed last year's total of $145 million. Give us a quick market report because this is a fluid situation. You do expect some line movement from where it currently is to where it'll be at kickoff tomorrow.
Yes, well, you played the song, What Goes Up Must Come Down. Not necessarily in terms of spreads, but that's what's happening. We saw Kansas City open up as a one-point favorite, money trickling in on Kansas City over the next 11 days, and basically, it was KC minus 1.5 at all the books. Now, when we're looking on the screen, what we see is some of the books have gone back to minus 1. A 2 did show briefly today in Las Vegas. That one book got gobbled up immediately. But right now, half the books minus 1.5, half the books minus 1 on Kansas City. We have seen a strong move on the under today. So
yes,
all week long, people have been betting the over. That opened 52, went up to 54, went up to 54.5. It's back down, the total is of the game, to 54. And I'm seeing some 53.5s pop up for the first time in about 4 or 5 days. So the pros are starting to come in and not just nibble, but actively bet the under on the total. I'm not sure what the total is going to do tomorrow, but Bernie, I really feel strongly. I speak to a lot of professional gamblers, people
yes.
who make a living
yes.
betting this, and there are more people out there betting sports for a living than people think out there. There
sure.
are actively dozens and dozens of pro sports bettors, and all the ones that I know are saying, boy, I'm looking to bet San Francisco on game day after the public's done betting Kansas City. I think that this line's going to drop a little bit down to 1, if not pick 'em tomorrow. Can't be sure because the public is certainly going to bet Kansas City. And there are some pros. It's not like all the wise guys just talk to each other and always agree. There are certainly some pros that like Kansas City in this game as well.
Well, Fez, the first 3 or 4 days, about 82% of the tickets were on Kansas City. At one time, the line touched 2.
Exactly, and it even touched 2 as late as today, like I said. So there's support for both teams, and that's why, like you mentioned, you're expecting the handle to be much higher on this year's game than last year.
We've kind of glossed over the total, and I was leaning under. I've decided to stay off the total. If you recall, last year it was 56. I love the under. It ended up being 13-3, one of the rare rocking chair games that you can enjoy. I enjoyed it. For all the folks out there that hated the Super Bowl, thought it was boring, man, I loved it last year. Bring on more punts, man. I had a big play on the under. But tomorrow I'm not as confident because I can almost make a case for both sides. But where I want to focus before we get into your prop bet strategy and some things we want to talk about, the first half, Fez, the number has been pretty much 27 until about Thursday. That's gone now. It's 26.5. I still feel there's very good value on the first half under. Would I rather have the 27? Of course I would. I would. But unless it lands on 27, I'm probably not going to get burned. I still like the under. I still think there's value. Fez, in the last 5 Super Bowls, the average points per quarter, first quarter, 4.4. This is combined. 17.4 in the second quarter. That's 21.8. Which opens the door for another prop. Will there be more points in the second half than the first half? If the yes is minus 185, in the last 5 Super Bowls, there have been an average of 10 points in the third quarter, 14.6 points in the fourth quarter. So it correlates. But before we get into some of these specific props, talk about basic prop strategy. There are over 500 props, and one of the things I like, it's a line you have coined. Perhaps you should copyright it. Stay away from the, quote, needle in the haystack bets.
Exactly. So what do we mean by that needle in the haystack bets? Well, those are the bets where dozens of different things can happen, and there's only one winner. You have the option of betting on dozens of things, and like I said, only one winner. Examples, who's going to score the first touchdown? What player? What is the exact number of points the Kansas City Chiefs are going to score? Are they going to score 3? Are they going to score 27? Are they going to score 28? Now, I know the media loves to say, hey, the Rams only got 3 last year, and someone bet them at 400-1 and think of all the money they made. But the bottom line is, who's going to bet the Rams to score 3 points? If you bet each and every one of these outcomes, the dastardly bookie hides so much vig in these props. And it's not like they let you bet, you know, will Kansas City score exactly 8 points? Yes, no. And you could bet that they won't score 8 points. And because of that, they rob you blind, the bookie does, on these bets. Look to avoid all these needle in the haystack bets.
Well, and let's drill down on that just a bit more, because you've said something. I've known you now about 8-9 years. And if you're looking at a prop or even a bet and you're getting 9-1 odds, the likelihood of that coming in is probably more like 20-1.
Exactly right. So the only exception to the needle in the haystack prop, and I do want to talk about this, is a prop on something that's predetermined. And there is such an animal. We need to talk about it. The Gatorade prop is a needle in the haystack.
And those are
prop.
Offshore props. That's not something that's going to be booked here in Vegas.
That's right. What color will the Gatorade be? And purple was one of these needle in the haystack type of bets. So I want to address why I personally did bet this. It was the biggest long shot early in the week at 13-1. Now purple is favored at even money. But the reason that people can bet purple is that here's a case where it's not like we're randomly going to choose which Gatorade is going to be chosen. There's a strong feeling that purple was indeed going to be the Gatorade. The feeling is that people in the know who actually are going to produce the Gatorade had information about it being purple, and that's why we saw this huge line move.
Steve Fezzik, the master of the prop. This is like listening to Tiger Woods talk about golfing. And so the bottom line is, the second key for your prop bet strategy is find bets that have yes, no.
Exactly. So, and these can vary from, are you going to bet a certain player to go over or to go under their number passing yards or rushing yards? National anthem, are you going to bet it to go over or under? As long as you can bet both sides of a prop, and there's only two possible outcomes, that's the sort of prop that you can more confidently wager on. And if you do your homework, look to get an edge in those sort of wagers. And frankly, that's the wagers that the pros are making. They're making bets like Mahomes rush yards over, and especially early in the week when it was 29.
Coming up, Fez's third key in the basic prop strategy. In addition to specific props, we're going to be suggesting you plan tomorrow. Further game analysis, and of course, best bets at the end of the show. But first, well, let's go to the man. He recently dumped Carly Rae Jepsen because she wouldn't wear socks and sandals. It's Brian Finley with the latest.
That is the truth, Bernie. Always speaking the truth. Damian Lillard dumping the Jazz with a stellar performance.
Dame brings it up, pulls up, three straight away. He buries it. Damian Lillard's got 39.
That's a bad man.
That is Travis Demers and Michael Holton on the call with the Blazers Radio Network. Yes, Lillard is a bad man. 51 points as the Blazers take down the Jazz 124-107. Over the last six games, Lillard is averaging 45 points and 10 assists. He said after this one, he's never been in this type of rhythm in his life. The Lakers get their first victory since Kobe's death. L.A. roughing up the Kings 129-113. LeBron James, a multitasking maven, his 11th triple-double of the season. Kyrie Irving reportedly having an MRI on Sunday after spraining his knee after the Nets took a 113-107 L to the Wizards. Jaylen Brown jaded on missing the All-Star game, scoring 32 points in the Celtics' 116-95 rout of the 76ers. Meanwhile, Philly's Joel Embiid face-planted, 1 of 11 from the floor. NFL awards coming out. Ravens quarterback Lamar Jackson as the unanimous MVP. Baltimore head coach John Harbaugh, coach of the year. Saints wide receiver Michael Thomas, offensive player of the year. And Patriots defensive back Stephon Gilmore, defensive player of the year. And finally, the 2020 Hall of Fame class inductees, including, in part, running back Edgerrin James, wide receiver Isaac Bruce, guard Steve Hutchinson, and two others. Bernie Fratto just missed on making the list. He was just out, but I expect him to make it on the second vote around as we send it back to Bernie Fratto.
Oh, you know, I do have a few holes in my game, Brian.
Yes.
That is Brian Finley with the update. Thanks so much, buddy. All right, to recap, Steve Fezzik, basic prop strategy. Number one, no needle in the haystack bets. Number two, bet props that have a yes, no as the decisive outcome. And three, this is important, especially if you can. If you really want to make money on the margins, shop. there are huge differences in the numbers and the prices you'll pay.
Yeah, so think about it. On our market report, we keep talking about, wow, there's a difference. Kansas City's one at some sports books and 1.5 at some others. Well, it's probably not going to make a difference. It won't make a difference unless Kansas City wins by 1. And as you mentioned, Bernie, that's only happened once in Super Bowl history. Well, look at these prop numbers on even the major players. I was just looking around tonight. Mahomes saw 304.5 for his passing yards. I also saw 314, a full almost 10-yard differential between books. You're going to see that at different books as they get exposed, as they take large wagers. So here's the case. If you're going to win betting the props, you absolutely have to have multiple books and be able to shop to get the very best of the number, because the numbers are so disparate and different from book to book.
The Chiefs have been averaging 43 points in the playoffs and the Niners averaging 32. And for the season, the Chiefs averaged 30. You know, what I find, Fez, Arnie asked a good question about, halftime betting. And what I have found in the NFL, way more so than college, is that numbers have a tendency to progress or regress to the mean. What I mean by that is I'm of the belief that tomorrow's game will start slow, as a lot of Super Bowls do, and Kansas City has been a notoriously slow-starting team, period. But then you start getting it going, and teams make their adjustments, and it stands to reason. For instance, let's say the game is at 14-10 at the half, just as arbitrarily for purposes of this discussion. All right, let's say the Niners are up 14-10. Well, if the Chiefs are averaging 43 in the playoffs and 29.9 for the season, they're going to progress toward that mean, so it stands to reason that both teams will score more points in the second half than they do in the first half. You can get that prop now, -185. It's a prop I haven't fired on yet, but I like it. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I would recommend, instead of laying 185, because frankly, this is a pro darling prop that we bet almost every Super Bowl, but we bet it early, second half to outscore first half. And it opens -120. We talk about shopping. And then by Super Bowl Sunday, it moves up to -185. Why? If you actually run the numbers, I know you quoted in an earlier segment the five-year history, but if you go back to the year 2000, I had our own Mackenzie Rivers run all the numbers for me, and you just blindly bet the second half to outscore the first half, you're 14-4-1. The word is out on this. The second half is higher scoring. The teams are tend to be more conservative to start the Super Bowl in the first half. Regression to the mean, as you mentioned, and caution to the wind in the second half. So I think the way to get at this, if you want to bet the second half to be higher scoring, I would just bet the second half to go over 27 points. It's available. It's a prop bet. And bet the first half to go under 26.5. I don't want to be laying -185. I think it's better to make two separate bets, first half under, second half over.
Fair enough. One of the other bets that's talked about a lot is, will the largest lead be more than 14.5 points? Now, 15 of the last 16 Super Bowls have been decided by less than 14 points, but from your standpoint, those two don't correlate.
Right. I don't care that the game ends up being close at the end. We mentioned Atlanta, New England.
28-3, right?
Atlanta, big lead, and really the poster child of why I don't ever like betting largest lead under. If we think back to the Rams-Tennessee Super Bowl, here was a defensive Super Bowl, a super close Super Bowl that went way under the total, and yet still the Rams got that 16-point lead in that
game.
Well,
it was 16-0 Rams, greatest show on turf, and then Tennessee rose from the ashes, tied the game, and then a second later, Isaac Bruce scored it into 23-16. But to your point, they had a 16-point lead, but it actually only won by 7. I think the game pushed.
Yeah,
I believe that game was a push.
Exactly right. That game opened 7. I still remember, stayed at 7 the whole week. We talk about differentials and how important shopping is. I know that up in Reno, that number bounced down to 6.5 in some places. Some of the Reno sports books did not have a good Super Bowl.
Now, the Super Bowl I covered in Detroit, Super Bowl 40, Seattle and Pittsburgh, was kind of a snoozer. However, and it was basically a Pittsburgh home game. Trust me, all those folks drove up from Pittsburgh, and they were amazing fans. But the play of the game was on a flea flicker from Antoine Randall to Hines Ward, for a touchdown that proved to be the winning margin. That would be one of those situations where a third player attempts a forward pass. And one of the popular props over the years has been the numbers 2.5. Will you bet over or under more than two? You know you're going to have two, because each quarterback is going to attempt a pass. So the question is, God forbid one gets hurt, another quarterback has to come in, or a third player, you either run a flea flicker or something along those lines. One particular bettor here in Las Vegas bet $28,000 on the under. I think you kind of like that bet.
Yeah, I think this is sharp money. This bettor laid minus 140. That's normally a lot of vig to bet on the under 2.5 passers. It's all about the history of these teams. If you look at Kansas City, they only had one non-quarterback throw a pass all year long. That was Colquitt, their punter. Well, that's the same Colquitt that got a punt blocked against Tennessee and frankly hasn't been playing all that well. Blew the first game against Tennessee. Also, excuse me, he got his punt blocked against Houston. So he's got enough on his plate to worry about than to have him script another pass play. And he's the only one all year for Kansas City non-quarterback to throw a pass. San Francisco's only had two non-quarterback passes the entire year. Absent a quarterback injury, I do not anticipate there'll be a passer. So I like that under 2.5 passers prop lay $1.40.
Before I get to some of the other props here that I want you to sort of grade, as it were, we kind of glossed over the total. Do you have a position on the total? In the last seven Super Bowls, the Super Bowl is 5-2 to the over, the average points per game, 50.7. And for what it's worth, and this is, again, one of those completely nebulous, meaningless statistics to me, all-time Super Bowls, NFC is 27-26. Who cares? Over or under tomorrow, do you have a thought?
Yeah, first half, under. But, second half, over.
Okay, so
why try to put those two pieces of data together and figure it out?
Well, think about it. There could be a turnover early. There could be a kick return early. There could be a couple of big plays early. And you could have a high-scoring first half. Then all of a sudden, you know, Robert Saleh makes an adjustment and the Niners start running the ball and they shorten the game. These are somewhat scientific, but the game's played by human beings. You understand that?
Yes, I do.
So my point, before I let you respond, my point is, might it be safer for some folks to just fire on the 53.5? Because it might land over anyway. What does it matter? Go ahead.
I think if you're going to bet over, if you're going to bet the total, I think it's fine to bet. If you like the over, bet the game over. However, pulling back the curtain, I can tell you how the pros do this. I rarely bet under for a Super Bowl, and here's why, Bernie. Not because if I like an under, I'll look to play selective props, because all these players, the Kelseys, the Kittles, the Tyreek Hills, the Mahomes, they all tend to get steamed up. And so by the time the game's about to kick off, all of these players tend to be too high. So as a pro, I'm betting so many different players under. Like, you look at last year's Super Bowl, made a killing because the game was so low scoring. But it's mathematically typically better to selectively play some of these select props, team totals unders, players under, than to play the game under.
Great stuff. He's Steve Fezzik. We've still got a ton more props to get to, including both of our bets. Final thoughts on the game. You want to hear something amazing? Discover matches all the cash back you earned at the end of your first year automatically, with no limit as to how much we'll match. Millions of people a year are getting their cash back matched. Discover Cashback Match. What are you waiting for? Learn more at discover.com/cashback match. I'm Bernie Fratto. We're coming to you live from the Geico Fox Sports Radio Studios, and this is the pregame show you always wanted. So don't go away. You're listening to Straight Outta Vegas.
Straight Outta Vegas!
We are back on Straight Outta Vegas, the pregame show you always wanted. I'm Bernie Fratto, coming to you live from the Geico Fox Sports Radio Studios. Before I go any further, I want to thank my broadcast team back in Los Angeles, Chris Perfett, Eric Roberts, Brian Finley. Guys do a great job keeping us glued together, keeping us out of jail, keeping us on the air, turning all the dials so we can bring this fine product to a grateful nation. Steve Fezzik, continuing with our prop bet extravaganza, you mentioned something earlier, and I want to make sure that it's emphasized. One of the things that enables you to analyze and determine where you might fire on certain prop bets is to try to get a gauge on how you perceive a game is going to begin.
Exactly right, because I think it's a lot easier to forecast the beginning of a game than the ending of a game when there's so much uncertainty. And this I know for sure. If Kansas City starts with the ball, there's a lot of uncertainty. Obviously, we expect Kansas City to be aggressive. But if San Francisco starts with the ball, and regardless, when they get their first possession, their second possession, I fully expect Kansas City to pound the rock. Let's face it. Had tremendous success against Minnesota and against Green Bay in the playoffs. It is hard to envision Shanahan is suddenly going to come out throwing the ball. And he said it best against Green Bay. We're going to keep running the ball till they can stop it. And with Kansas City having suspect rush defense, at least that's their reputation, I expect San Fran to run the ball. So how do we benefit? We're going to play Jimmy G, a prop Jimmy G. We have more pass yards in the first half or the second half. We're going to bet Jimmy G more pass yards in the second half because I expect Jimmy G will be limited in his pass yards in the first half. You have to lay a little extra vigors. Jimmy G, more pass yards, second half, minus 140.
I think it makes a lot of sense. And in the two playoff games, the Niners ran the ball 89 times, only threw the ball 28 times, still managed to put up plenty of offense, but stands to reason what's really been their bread and butter, their ability to run the ball, especially against that Chiefs 25th-ranked rush defense. You mentioned something about if the Chiefs get the ball first. This is a prop that I will probably fire on tomorrow. Kansas City's first possession, score or punt. It's basically a pick 'em. 120 on both sides. My goodness. We know how slow they've been. Kansas City has been a notoriously slow starter. As I mentioned to Arnie and Aaron, in their last three playoff games, they've fallen behind 10-0, 14-0, 24-0. It seems to me that it's more likely they're going to punt on their first possession than score points. Thoughts?
I like it. If they couldn't score against Houston, and I know they were nervous, they dropped passes, and they couldn't score against Tennessee. Well, now that no one is going to confuse the Houston defense for that San Francisco defense. Oh. So now playing a much tougher defense. I like it. KC to punt before they score. I like it.
Speaking of how the game will start, this is a prop that really caught my eye as well. Will the opening kickoff be a touchback? To me, it just stands to reason that with all the adrenaline and the way kickers kick now, as opposed to the, you know, the Belichick where they try to kick down to the 1 yard line and pinions had the 20, just blast it, let your defense take the field, don't take a shot on a return. I just, you know, am I wrong? It seems like the opening kickoff, given the fact that adrenaline's flowing, should be a touchback.
I like it, and also let's face it, the temperature is going to be higher than it will the rest of the night at the opening kickoff, and so last time I checked my physics,
ball will travel farther.
Ball travels further in 68 than it does in 60.
And the price is not terrible, minus 130. Not bad. One of the other props that someone I respect a lot is on Robbie Gould field goal attempts, or excuse me, field goals made, 1.5. He played the over. Robbie Gould did not kick a lot of field goals this year. He missed 3 games. He only kicked 23 field goals. But in the 3 games that he missed, I believe the Niners kicked 8 field goals in those 3 games. The point being that drives can stall in a Super Bowl, and Kansas City's got a better-than-average red zone defense. You like that play or not?
I would lean that way. It so depends how the game plays out. If Kansas City gets up double digits, it's a bad bet. But we've been basically handicapping. We expect this to be a very close game, so I think I like it.
Last one before you give your two best bets. The longest field goal, 47.5. I kind of like the under.
Yeah, 47.5. There's a big point of demarcation. Pros love playing any number above 47.
All right, Fez. You are the master of the prop. Give the folks your two best prop bets or two best bets for tomorrow's game.
Yeah, so I already gave out Jimmy G more pass yards in the second half than in the first half. And a big part of that, I know everyone's asking, hey, Fez, isn't Jimmy G just going to hand the ball off the entire game by your handicap? He won't be able to if San Fran is behind. And there's a 50% chance that's going to happen in the second half. And so if that does occur, I expect it to be an easy win, Jimmy G, more pass yards, second half. But my favorite prop bet, my best bet, in fact, Kansas City, number of players to rush the ball, number of rushers, under 4.5. And what's driving the reason this bet's so good is Shady McCoy is very likely to be inactive for this game. And I know what everyone's saying, hey, who cares? He was only going to get one rush anyways. Well, now he's not going to get any rushes. And if he doesn't get any rushes, now there's simply not enough guys for Kansas City to have 5 guys get a rush. In fact, really both their wide receivers, Watkins and Hill, are probably going to have to run the ball for me to lose. So I'm going number of rushers for Kansas City under 4.5.
And real quickly, did you not fire on Jimmy G yards passing under 237.5?
That was a bet that I made early in the week, and I do still like it. Jimmy G under 237.5.
All right, before I give my best bet, I would just say this. I feel the edges in the key categories very much favor San Francisco. I believe strongly they have a superior defense. They have an extremely powerful running game. I think they will assert themselves against Patrick Mahomes. They will pressure him. They will sack him. They will hit him. Not that he won't do some damage, but the Chiefs' wobbly rush defense, Fez, for me, will actually be the difference in the game. I like the Niners to win tomorrow, 28-24. But my best bet, Fez, is the first half under, which we talked about earlier. In the last five Super Bowls, they start notoriously slow. I expect that to happen again tomorrow, like the under of 26.5 tomorrow in the Super Bowl. He's Steve Fezzik. I'm Bernie Fratto. That's going to do it for this weekend edition of Straight Outta Vegas. Next up, the man from Asheville. He brings it strong. It is time for the Jason Martin Show.
Straight Outta Vegas!